The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, before we get started with our breakdown of Home Sweet Home Alone, just wanted to give you a quick warning in case you thought maybe this is a kids' film, I might listen to this one with the kids. There's a little bit, there's a lot of swearing in this one. The film is fucking awful and it forced it from us. So just in case, just a quick warning. Hope you enjoy it.
I don't know why they're always trying to remake the classics.
Oh my gosh, this is so terrible.
That did not sound right.
We did a bad thing. One of the worst bads we could have done.
Oh, this is garbage.
Merry Christmas and welcome to our special, theoretically patrons only, but because it's Christmas, it's for everyone.
You can have it.
Breakdown of Ho 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 Home Sweet Home Alone.
Yeah, and it did cause us a breakdown.
Oh,
yeah.
Christ!
That's yeah. So I think you know, the kind of spoiler alert. We should have a spoiler alert at the very first.
Oh
thing,
yeah, which absolutely.
Which
yeah.
is don't watch it.
Yeah, don't spoil your Christmas.
Don't spoil your Christmas by watching this piece of shit. It's yeah. Don't be taken in by American stand-ups, British stand-ups. Don't be taken in by any of that. It is the worst thing ever.
But if you think you might have to,
yeah,
then be aware we will be, to the extent you
ruining
can,
it.
Spoiling this.
Yeah, yeah. to end, yeah. As far as we can, we're going to ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we can ruin it more
so,
than
yeah,
they
you might
have.
Watch it
yeah.
first and then come back to find out what we thought of it. Or you might want to listen to what we thought of it and then think, oh, I've got to see that. Which I sometimes do listening to the God Awful Movies guys. I hear, hear them go through one and it just sounds so absurd.
That.
I think, okay, I've got to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it feels like you're kind of you're going in, you know, with a guide, with a who's just gonna take you through, you know, the valley of the shadow of death.
By all means, like watch it while listening to this and just kind of pause us occasionally if we get ahead of what's going on screen. That would be another way to go. But
or pause the movie when we inevitably run on for hours.
We might do that occasionally.
One thing,
you might have to pause the movie a little bit. Don't start the movie just yet if that's what you're doing. So, I mean, to what extent do we want to talk about just the whole concept and
I think we should, because I mean the whole the conceit is the word. The whole conceit is that this is possibly that this is The Force Awakens to Star Wars.
Yeah, it's next generation, isn't it?
Home
next gen.
Well, except that, the thing is that Home Alone is kind of. Maybe this is Jaws 8, I don't know, or
I think it's Jaws 3D, The Revenge.
Jaws 3.
No,
exactly,
Jaws 4, The Revenge. Jaws 3D.
It's the one that turns up in Back to the Future 2. It's that. Or it's, it's not even Fast and Furious 27 or whatever we're on now, because at least that, they just kind of, it's a working formula. Perhaps it's Police Academy 8. It's a working formula that you stick to. Whereas this, and it ought to be that. We're not saying that Home Alone itself is an untouchable movie. You know, it's a completely, completely brilliant movie.
This does make it look really good, though.
Oh yeah. But it was. You know, Home Alone is robust enough to be able to be rebooted. I would posit, Milud, that it's possible to, in the hands of somebody that knew what they were doing, you could just grab, if you understood the formula of Home Alone, you know, bad guys, kid on his own, defends the thing, because it's ultimately,
it's not a
satisfying, it's Wile E. Coyote, isn't it?
There is an argument to be made that in 1990 they kind of caught lightning in a bottle with the combination of the plot, the traps, the casting.
Yeah.
Specifically Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
Yeah.
It's a difficult combination to replicate in a satisfying way.
Yeah.
As has been proven by Home Alone's 3, 4, and 5.
Five.
Yes. And the off brand, not by the same production company, Bone Alone, which was a dog.
And not it wasn't a one that you just found on accidentally when you switched off the protection of the your
yeah no it wasn't it wasn't search. Wasn't a triple X parody, no, it was a it was canine based.
Right. Okay,
but yeah,
I want to go see that now.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, maybe we'll talk about it at some point in the future, who knows, but yeah, this I don't think this is probably the worst of the Home Alone films. I think I've seen all of them.
I did download the whole package.
Awful piece of shit.
Right.
That pisses all over your childhood.
Right.
Four is terrible.
This one
is unsatisfying. It's really unsatisfying in so many ways, and kind of anger inducing in others.
Yeah, because it doesn't engage your brain. It doesn't engage your. It doesn't make you snigger with delight, and it doesn't pull at your heartstrings. What it does, it goes through the motions.
Yeah,
it's kind of like when Top Gear folded and Chris Evans took it over and got Matt LeBlanc involved and just made a tribute act. He made kind of a fan version of Top Gear, and it stunk.
Yeah,
because it was just far too. It was going, oh yeah, well, we've got to have a bit about this, and we've got to have that, and we've got to have some three-wheel cars, and we've got to have a pointless race, and then we've got to have some forced banter between the three who spent 20 years getting to the point where it was, you know, kind of a slick set of personalities, and you can't just make that.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, you can make something that's that shape.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
We were talking earlier on, Mark and I, about I just saw Spielberg's West Side Story.
Yeah,
and it was brilliant. I absolutely loved it, and I love the original. I love Robert Wise's version.
Yeah,
and one thing that was very clear, I think, in watching Spielberg's version is that he loves West Side Story. He loves the original film. I think it looks like, from what I saw, everyone involved in that production loves West Side Story.
Yeah.
The music, the writing, the original film, everything about it. It's an homage, and it's a reboot, and it's a reimagining in a way, but utterly respectful to the original and adoring of it.
Yeah.
This feels like someone watched Home Alone and then told someone about it. That person didn't really get what was good about it and then made a film.
Yeah, yeah.
Tried to replicate it.
They included they didn't all understand. All the
yeah. They get them all the main points are there. So, well, most of the main points are there, but twisted and badly done, and they have not understood. They must not be fans of Home Alone. This is a cash grab.
That's the
from Disney.
Yeah,
because if they loved Home Alone, if they understood what was great about Home Alone, they wouldn't have done this.
yeah. That's the thing. That's Chris Evans is a fanboy, but he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
All he's doing is just going, oh, wasn't it great when they ha 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 ha, and then so did that. And you think, well, yeah, it was great when they did it. It's not great when you do it, because you don't understand what was great about it. You've fallen in love with it. You've gone along with it. You've been buoyed up by it, but you don't know why it's done what it's done. And that's, so this thing, it kind of ticks all the boxes. Someone's written a list. Someone's listened to somebody enthusing about it.
It was a Disney executive, wasn't it? It was Disney bought Fox and thought, oh, now we own Home Alone. That made a lot of money. That was like the biggest Christmas movie of the early 90s.
Yeah, someone taught me through it.
Yeah, and right, just go, right, okay, down, give me a bullet point list of all the things that happen in Home Alone.
Yeah.
We'll make that.
We'll make that. And we'll give it to some comedy writers.
I mean, that would have been great. But they did. That's the amazing thing.
I know. Yeah.
The people involved in this. And that's the one of the saddest things is the people involved in this are good. I like most of them.
Yeah.
The writers, you've got Mikey Day from Saturday Night Live. He's fine. He's good. I like him. He plays Don Jr. on Saturday Night Live. Has the I forget the other writer's name, Streeter someone, but he's from comedy College Humor. He's pretty good. Dan Mazer, the director, wrote for Ali G, directed wrote for Borat, and I think, I don't know if he directed Borat, but he's done that. Those are the kinds of things he's done. They're fine. I'm not a huge Ali G / Borat fan, but they're fine. They're pretty funny. Some people find them absolutely hilarious, but it's obviously a very, very, very different style to this.
Yeah, yeah.
The only other thing I think he's done is Dirty Grandpa, which wasn't great. but yeah, it was an odd choice to get Dan Mazer to direct this. Especially when you're looking at, you know, John Hughes writing the original, Chris Columbus directing it, there was a history there, but Chris Columbus, it was earlier in his career, obviously, pre Harry Potter and lots of other successes that he had, but still, he's basically a kid's director. Dan Mazer isn't.
Yeah.
This is a kid's film.
No, the whole thing is that that one with those guys doing it, they know they're onto something, and they're kind of making the original. They're thinking, right, this would be great. This, on the face of it, bad guys, really quite bad guys, are coming around and they're going to rob empty houses over Christmas, and then by some fairly clever subterfuge, Kevin gets left on his own, and he's up against these. So it's a thing that you wouldn't want your kid to deal with ever.
Yeah,
against it's properly bad guys, and they're thinking, right, well, this is going to be a brilliant Christmas movie. So they're kind of breaking new ground, whereas this is, it exists in a world where Home Alone already exists. And Home Alone 2, which, compared with the other three in the series, not actually that bad.
That's pretty good. Home Alone 2 is good. It's perfectly serviceable.
Yeah. Complete remake.
And they did different stuff. They ramped up the traps even more than the first one. Yep. Two's perfectly good. Some people prefer it to the original. I don't, personally, but... then 3, then 5, then 4. And I'm not...
Yeah,
and it's right. A bit somewhere in those lower... the lower ranks.
Yeah.
There. But it's... They've tried to do something a bit different. Unfortunately, everything they tried to do different is awful. But they've tried something. They've tried to not just... remake Home Alone. They've tried to switch it around, and the main thing they've done to try and switch it around is by focusing more on the people who are trying to break in to the house. They arguably are the main characters in this film. Unfortunately, they are also the only sympathetic characters in the film.
They've switched it around completely, because the family, Kevin's McAllister's family, are pretty unsympathetic in a way, but the extended family is. But in this one, and Kevin is kind of adorable, and you can't, and you.
I mean, Kevin is a Kevin's a bit lippy. He's a bit of a dick, but he's put upon a lot. He is the little fish in a big pond of all of these older cousins and brothers and sisters and uncle to a arseholes. And he's having a hard time at the beginning of Home Alone. He talks back. He shouts at his mum. They have an argument. But basically, he's a good kid. He's a cute kid. He's also a little kid compared to the kid in this film.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't take much to feel sympathetic towards Kevin.
Yeah. Whereas this time around, the kid. So my first note that I wrote was, the kid's an arsehole.
Yeah, he's a total dick.
You go, what the fuck? And it's like, and you think there are those moments in the original when you look at it and you go, oh dear, no, he can't act at all. And then, but that's entirely the kid. And this is the kid out of Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is Archie Yates. I couldn't quite figure out if he can't act or not. I'm not sure. He is, I mean, basically, he hasn't done a lot. He was charming in Jojo Rabbit. He was absolutely lovely in that role.
Yeah.
And it would be easy to assume from that he's a great actor. But it might just be that Taika Waititi found him and thought, what a cute British kid. It doesn't matter, he can't do a German accent. Let's have him, and it will work. And in that, there was a curious, there was a sense in Jojo Rabbit that the kids were obviously in that situation being required to be adults. They were being soldiers. They were being treated in many ways as, you know, Nazis or whatever, sympathizers. You know, they were.
Yeah.
They were young kids who were being thrust into an adult world. And so Archie Yates's kind of delivery in those scenes up against the Jojo, they were having not necessarily grown-up conversations, but they were relating to each other on a kind of grown-up level. And talking about how, you know, this is too much for me, I can't take it, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In this film, it still feels like he's a grown-up in a child's body. It feels like kind of Gary Coleman in Different Strokes.
Yeah.
He's not just precocious. He's not just a kid who's happy to talk to adults. He doesn't seem like a kid.
Yeah. I put my next note was pint size Ricky Gervais.
He's not quite as annoying as Ricky Gervais, but
but it's, yeah. Well, I mean, it's in proportion.
But okay, let's get into it. The film starts with a kind of PowerPoint Christmassy title over some proper Christmassy music. We haven't got the John Williams theme for this one, which was kind of ominous and interesting in the original.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got was it Holly Jolly Christmas or something like that, starting it off.
Yeah.
Might as well be, if it isn't.
Might as
well. And we meet, we start off on the outside of a house. It's an open house. People are coming to see, look around the house, see if they want to buy it. Keenan Thompson, also from SNL, is a realtor showing people around, and this is this time round's Wet Bandits house. Pam and Jeff are the couple, and they for some reason are at the open house as well. I don't think that's a thing. Usually it's just the realtor, I think, that shows people around, but anyway, they're there. We start off, one of the first scenes is, I don't know why, it's basically a guy, an extra who we don't see again, opens the closet, turns a light on, and has this look on his face like, yeah, I knew it, this closet's shit.
Yeah. Kind of,
what?
Phew.
I don't know what
we don't even
going
we
for.
Don't even get to see what's in there. It just goes.
It's such a weird moment.
Yeah, and it cuts away. You think, oh right, we're going to see in there, which will be, you know, if this is Home Alone, there might be, I don't know, but you know, a whole bunch of toys hanging up, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, we get nothing. We cut to somebody wiping across the screen at the top of the stairs.
So one thing I'm going to say at this point, and this is going to come up, is this film has some of the worst foreshadowing I have ever seen in a film. In both directions. Things foreshadowed that don't need to be in, things utterly not that should be. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that. But yeah, that would have been a moment where you could have teased something, but this isn't Kevin's house, or you know, this film's Kevin. Was he called Max? This is Jeff and Pam's house. And we meet a hipster couple in the kitchen who are basically assholes. So far in the film. I mean, we've only met these two, but it's gonna be a trend.
Yeah, they're assholes. Yeah.
Everyone's an asshole. There's a hilarious school shooting based joke early on. Where Jeff points out that the local school that Pam works in has just had new metal detectors put in when Keenan's trying to kind of sell them the house. He's actually pretty good. I like Keenan Thompson. I don't like him generally as a rule. I think he's one of my least favourite SNL actors actually, but in this he's pretty good. He's quite entertaining. To be honest, again, I said I like all the people involved in this, or most of them. Although in some cases I don't like their performances, I generally like. I mean, Jeff and Pam are Ellie Kemper and Rob Delaney, who I like, and they do an okay job.
Yeah.
Then we meet Max and his mum. We've talked about Max already. His mum is Aisling B, who's an Irish comedian, who for some reason is speaking with an English accent.
I know. Guess what my third note was? Why is she doing
why
that?
Is it
just to explain Max's accent?
I think that's the only thing. I think that it was just the kid was linchpin casting. They were like, whatever we do, we have to have Archie Yates in this.
Yeah.
So whoever we get to play his mum, no matter what she normally sounds like, she's going to have to do an English accent because he can't do any kind of accent. Yeah. There's no way we could expect this kid to act in that, like, pretending he's from another place. He can't do that. He can only do this voice. So everyone else has to match the voice. Only the mum.
It's more Ricky Gervais. I think he is the son of Ricky Gervais.
She's not great at an English accent.
No.
And I think part of that might be that as Brits we're so used to seeing her in her normal voice.
Which is really quite Irish.
Really quite Irish, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's noticeable that she's trying all the time. It's all she can do. Keep her voice sounding kind of English.
It's up the front of it kind of gets in the way of everything else. Yes.
The other thing about all of the actors, most of the actors in the film are genuinely good comedians. They're comedy actors. Some of them are comedy writers. And for the most part, they're completely underused. In their comedy skills. Again, Ellie Kemper and Rob Delaney, fine. They get to do slapstick. They do silly things. That's fine. Aisling B, I mean, it's not a comedy role. Kevin's mum, Max's mum in this film, not a comedy role. Catherine O'Hara was mum in Home Alone. She's a great actress. She's done comedy, but she's not a comedian.
No.
What you wanted from Kevin's mum in the first one was a burning need to get back to Kevin.
Exactly, yeah. You don't get that
from
this moment, you know, notwithstanding that the opening bit, you've got to have this somewhat disdainful relationship between the mum and the son, sufficient that it's possible that they wouldn't miss him if he was gone.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, there's got to be a moment when he disappears sufficient that everybody else in the place can go without him.
Absolutely.
So that
I can believe that about this kid more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, they are on their way back from a coffee shop apparently, and he needs to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
She says something like, "Why didn't you go? I said you should go in the coffee shop." And so that's where they're on their way back from to their house, presumably.
Yeah.
At this point, he says, "I couldn't go in there because Uncle Stu, who is not in the car, had been in there and he, you know, smelled the place out or whatever.
Smelled the place out.
And I've had like 6 sodas and I'm only 10." And he says, you know, 6 sodas into 10-year-old's little bladder, do the maths. At which point I wrote, no, stop it. Because there were multiple English people on this film. Dan Mays is English. The director is English. Ashlyn B. lives in England. Rob Delaney lives in England. Archie Yates is English. Every single one of them would have said... No English person has ever said the maths.
No. They kind of they do it in a jokey way, correcting the Americans who say do the math.
Yeah.
And we say, no, it's maths. Yeah, plural.
But it's not even like he's assimilated, because later on they say they've only come from London 2 months ago. They've only just moved there.
Yeah. So, and then you kind of think, well, actually, of all the streets are fairly empty. There's quite a lot of trees. He's a 10-year-old kid. They could just stop and he could piss on the side of the road.
Yeah, they'd probably get away with that. But she decides to go to the open house, which is kind of a genius idea.
Yeah.
Presuming you ask permission when you're there. You know, if you went to an open house, if you were like pretending you're looking around and said, look, I'm sorry, my kid really needs the toilet, do you mind? Yeah. That'd be all right. I think that'd be fine. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I did put this in the pro column. There are 2 bits that live in the pro column. This is one of them. Yeah. And I'll tell you the other one later on.
Yeah.
Which is nothing to do with the plot or anything. It's just cinematography and stuff.
So Max comes out of the bathroom and sees Jeff getting some orange sodas from a cupboard just in the living room
to the
I guess
it, and you think, well, that's
a weird cupboard.
It is, and architecturally I'm thinking, well, where is the depth of the bathroom?
When you look at the house from the front,
the bathroom, yeah. I know
there should be a lot more house. It's a much bigger house than we see the inside of. That doesn't make a lot of sense, because it looks like the entire front of the house is the front room and this cupboard. That's all there is.
There
aren't any other places you could go from what we see of that room. But the front of the house is much bigger. The kid sees these sodas and he says, can I get one of those? He doesn't say please, because he's a dick.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think he says please the entire film. I could be wrong. Jeff handles it amazingly well. He's being... a great parent for someone who is not going to display great parenting skills in this film. He says, you know, I think we should probably ask your mum if you can have one, because they're a bit sugary, which is fine.
Yeah.
The kid is a dick to him from this point on.
Yeah. because he's been snubbed. Yeah. And in fact, that's, you know, that turns up right at the end, you know, so we kind of, you know, it's, So, yeah, remember the soda can, and they are extraordinarily large soda cans.
They're very
large,
yeah. With just orange soda written on the side.
Yes, orange soda, yeah. And it's you know, huge soda can. When we kind of, you have to make note of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for some reason, not only is he getting soda cans out of the cupboard, which he seems to be getting lots of.
Crate, yeah.
Yeah, loads.
Yeah.
And there are 4 stacked on the floor. And why is he getting those? He's getting those because his wife tried to get him out of the kitchen to get some more soda.
Ruining the sale by talking about metal detectors.
Exactly, yeah. And then for some reason he gets a box of porcelain-headed dolls out of the same cupboard. And then the kid is just even more of an asshole, and says, "Oh, right, yeah. So you've got dolls? Why have you?" And then looks at him kind of funny and just goes, "Okay,
yeah." Yeah,
what's the implication?
This scene involves far more small talk than a British person would be comfortable making with anyone. <There's>... But at this point, he would have said, "Okay, thanks very much, bye," and gone. But yeah, but he wouldn't say that because he's a dick. And so he likens Jeff to Frankenstein's monster, and then when Jeff basically says, this porcelain doll is quite delicate. He goes full asshole basically and says, "Oh, little boy doesn't want to share his dolly to a grown man he's just met."
And not just a grown man, but a grown man who's the size of Frankenstein's monster.
He's very lucky he
doesn't
just get punched at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, yeah. And, you know, Jeff being the big Frankenstein monster teddy bear just goes, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Max's mum arrives, instantly insults Jeff, who is extremely polite in return to everyone because he's the bad guy. And Jeff makes a bit of a dad joke about selling his kid. He says, because the mum notices that the dolls are this thing that she's seen on an antique show, says they could be worth lots of money. And he says, "Oh, that's more than I got for selling my real kid." And Max, who at this point now doesn't understand humour or anything, apparently, because he doesn't get that that's a joke.
Yeah.
And he's such a fucking dick. And
it kind of takes it to heart at that point. Well, actually, it kind of doesn't enough because it gets flagged massively later.
Yeah, we need to. This is some of the foreshadowing that. Oh, anyway. Well, it's just if you did the foreshadowing right, you wouldn't need to call back to it properly. So mum does the full name thing. Maxwell Johann, whatever his surname is, Mercer. And only she's not angry. She's just doing it like it's because he's being a bit of a dick. Then he is yells it back at her, kind of. And he continues being a dick until she says, "Okay, that's it. No McDonald's on the way home." So they were on their way home from a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Via a McDonald's.
Yeah.
And he couldn't fucking go to the toilet in the McDonald's.
I know. Well, that was plus the only thing that will get him out of there is say you've got to behave now or you don't get the McDonald's. And you think, well, actually, that's how spoilt is this kid? How, you know, that no wonder he's a dick. He's had six sodas in a coffee shop,
and now he's getting McDonald's on the way home, and he's complaining that she might not give him it if he's a dick.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, if ADHD and, you know, just being an arsehole comes from dietary things, then, you know, you need to learn. This guy's been on the planet 10 years. Surely you've learned something by now. Just stop giving him the Haribo. You know, it's that whole.
Yeah. I should say at this point, sugar does not have an effect on Charles' behavior.
No.
Yeah. So Jeff makes another dad joke. He says, "Oh, that's a McShame," or something like that, and has a drink from the soda just to piss Max off. Which is nice.
Which pleased me no end.
Yeah. But Mum is standing there, Carol is standing there in the background, watching him drinking this for 5 or 6 seconds.
Yeah.
With the weirdest expression on her face.
Yeah.
And that's not her fault. That's not Aisling B's fault. Because there's no way you can act this. There's nothing to do in that scene. There's no reason she would stand there. She would have, by this point, said to Max, "Right, come on, we're going." This is bad directing. She didn't need to be in the background.
No.
This is your film. You can move the actor before you do this joke.
That should have been a close-up.
Yeah.
Just to get, you don't need a.
Should have been over the shoulder from Max to Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing him and then getting a reverse and shot to Max of yes, him exactly. being pissed yeah. off. You yeah. don't need to have Aisling Bea in that shot. She is awkward, no. weird, and uncomfortable, and I don't blame her. That is all Dan Mazer's fault.
Exactly, and it's a really bad cut as well, because there's no cut on action, because no. she turns to look up at Max drinking the thing, because he's pointing yeah. Jeff drinking the thing, and then we see the entire turn in that shot. And then it cuts to the next shot, and she's not moving.
It's so weird. Yeah.
But this is why, my whole thought about, even if you were doing this at film school, if you said, okay, so what we're going to do for our final project, we're going to remake Home Alone, and then people go, oh, yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, do that. And you would study it like crazy, and then make it, you'd make a 10-minute version, but you'd make it, and your tutors would go, yeah, great idea, off you go do that. And then you'd have to write a thesis about why it's important to do so, and you'd do all the, and you'd apply all the right things, and you'd fit in, it's a bit of pitching against good and evil and all that kind of stuff. And you would, and the good triumphs, and the mother and the child are reunited at the end and all that kind of stuff. You'd put that in, and not even film students are making this film. It's they just cash cow. All they've got is cha-ching, cha-ching coming up at any time. They're going, right, we need to, what we'll do, this will make everybody surprised. We'll make the kid the bad guy, and we'll make the bad guys the good guys. And that's it. That's the entirety of their subterfuge. And they go, brilliant, brilliant. Nobody's done that before. Off you go. Greenlight it.
So Carol, after she stops being awkward, wanders off. We get a close-up of Max angrily, because he's pissed off that he didn't get a drink, angrily looking directly at the dolls, and we get a close-up of the dolls.
Yeah.
I'm going to spoil the rest of the film now. Because this is a lie. This is the filmmaker lying to you. This isn't misdirection or foreshadowing, definitely not, or storytelling through montage. This is lying to the audience. It is very, very clear from these two shots that Max steals the doll.
Yeah,
but he doesn't really, and we will find out. Everyone assumes he has, because of course they assume he has, because the filmmakers basically just showed you him doing it.
Yeah, gave and, no
and,
other choice.
And then later on in the film said, no, we didn't do that. No, he didn't do that. Bullshit. Yeah. This is really bad filmmaking.
I don't understand how it got there
ends
up being where it ends up.
This is like they used to say about the kind of Saturday morning cinema serials where the good guy would go off the end of the cliff on his horse. And then it would say there'd be a cliffhanger next week. And then when they start, he wouldn't have gone off the cliff, and he didn't. And it changes the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They very, very, very clearly telegraph him stealing this doll, everything but showing him putting it in his pocket.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it because they are shitty filmmakers.
And it doesn't open the possibility of what he ends up stealing. No. It doesn't give you the chart. It would be nice to be able to go, what's going on now? So we know about the value of that, but we also know that, maybe he's done it. And we need that maybe in order to believe that he's capable of redemption at the end.
And thing is, the fact that we know, the fact that we think we know the same thing Jeff ultimately figures out, that he stole the doll, makes various aspects of this film much worse. There's a thing that Hitchcock used to talk about the difference between a thriller and suspense, you see the bus going along the road and it blows up, that's a thriller. You see the bomb on the bus, that's suspense.
Yeah.
And because we think the kid has stolen this this doll, all of the bad stuff that happens to the nice couple who are just trying to get their doll back is much worse. It's much more unpleasant. If we knew all along that they had made a terrible mistake and were essentially terrorizing this kid because of a mistake they'd made, it wouldn't have been quite as bad. The bad stuff that happens, because he's justifiably scared of them, arguably. But we think all the time that he's stolen from them, and all they're trying to do is get this valuable thing back.
Yeah. So it actually...
It makes it worse.
Yeah. So it turns out, yes, quite. They are... Yeah, they're storming the castle that the bad guy is occupying.
Yeah. And we are absolutely on their side.
Yeah.
Almost this entire film.
Which means that when we get to the end bit and it's all kind of resolved, it's completely hollow and meaningless and pointless and awful. Because the switcheroo right at the end, when they, it's awful. So, yes, quite, because I've done thought about it in those terms, but that's why it's clunky at the end when... when he softens and says, I'm just here on my own. You just go, fuck off. You've just been hurtling. You've
almost killed us multiple times.
Yes. And we know that you stole it and you're only doing it in order to protect the bad thing that you've done, which is awful, which is much, much worse. Yeah. Rather than. Yes, because for the traps to work, we've got to be somewhat on your side. We've got to be rooting for Kevin.
Yeah, by the time... Absolutely.
We root for Kevin.
By the time... no matter if you like him from the start, because, again, he's a bit of an annoying bastard at the beginning, Kevin. You can see why some of his family don't like him. But by the time the traps roll round, there's been a character arc in Home Alone.
Yeah.
He's grown up. He has... shopped for himself. He's learned the true meaning of family and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Before he's under attack and having to defend his home.
Yeah.
In this film, there's no character growth whatsoever. If anything, he becomes more of a dick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yes, and that's why the payoff at the end, when he kind of said, yeah, I'm here all on my own, and they go, oh no, really, are you? Oh no. You think, well, I don't give a shit. You don't warm to him at all.
Yeah.
So when the characters,
maybe if you weren't such a dick, your family wouldn't have forgotten you, is what I would have said.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
We'll skip over a bit that's basically just the learning more about the fact that the couple haven't even told their kids that they're selling the house because they're having financial difficulty. Basically, the kids, Jeff and Pam's kids don't matter at all. I don't even know what the daughter's name is. They don't matter, but they'll be in the film occasionally,
and they don't matter seemingly to Jeff and whatever her name is.
Pam.
What is her name? Pam. They don't matter to them because they haven't told them. They're holding an open house. They've got things on the drive and the guy is still there with the balloons and they're going, oh yeah, no, we haven't told the kids. You go, okay. So yeah, clearly it don't matter. Don't matter to them. Don't matter to the plot.
They very much learn the opposite of the moral of Home Alone about family being the most important thing through this film. They ignore their family completely to save the house, the physical house. Because family, fuck family, it's about the building.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. About the fact that we don't want to have to give it away.
It's such a weird inverse moral.
Yeah, and when they get to right at the end, we'll get there. But yeah,
eventually, yeah. So we're with Max's family now, and this is the scene from Home Alone where everyone's being mean to Kevin.
Yeah.
But no one's particularly being mean to Max. He sits with a couple of his cousins and they're playing video games and he asks to have a go while they're playing and they ignore him. That's as bad as it gets. He hasn't got an arsehole uncle. His uncle is just a bit wacky. like Uncle Frank in the first one. He hasn't, you know, his mum is on the phone trying to sort out the fact that they've been put onto different flights on their trip to fucking Tokyo over Christmas. Yeah. They are obscenely rich, this family. Their house is bigger of a mansion than the McAllister's house was.
Yeah.
But yeah, at this point, we see in Home Alone, Kevin is rebuffed by his older brother and his sister, who he's trying to get to help him pack because no one's, you know, he's eight in Home Alone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And he can't pack for a trip to Paris for himself for 2 weeks or whatever they're going for. And no one will help him. And everyone's mean to him. And Buzz eats the only pizza that Kevin likes. So when Kevin hits Buzz or pushes him or whatever and causes a mess, Kevin gets told off for it. The stuff that happens to Max in this scene is his house is quite busy.
Yeah. And nothing. Well, there was a bit where, so the basically this is just a vehicle for foreshadowing absolutely everything. So there's a bit where his sister's wearing a VR goggles. Somebody treads on some Lego.
Yeah. I'll tell you who that somebody is. That's his dad.
Oh, okay. I wondered.
It's not surprising that you don't know who that is.
No.
Because he's barely in the film.
Yeah.
This is Andy Daly. He's a he's a good comic actor. He was the doctor in Silicon Valley. He's a member of the Upright Citizens Brigade, the comedy troupe. He's a good comic actor. He gets like two lines in the entire film.
Yeah.
Neither of which is in any way funny. And there's a woman later on who's trying to sell them photos at a Christmas fair who gets more lines than Andy fucking Daly does in this film.
And funnier lines too. Yeah.
Why bother? Why hire someone like that? Just a day player.
Yeah. And he kind of, and he does turn up and let's spoil the end. Well, spoil and end, but he turns up right in the epilogue.
He's in
at
it.
At the end of the table.
He has one line. He has one line in the last scene.
I was going, I'm looking at it going, who is that? Yeah. Who is that guy? It's not the kind of freaky uncle who, you know, kind of plays the I thought was his dad for the longest while. He also turns up on the screensaver, the Abbey Road pastiche screensaver. And I kind of went, oh, okay.
His dad.
There he is. Who is that? Yeah. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So we get,
I thought he was dead.
You might as well be.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't make her an only, a single parent.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sister, he kind of pushes past his sister a bit. He puts his hand on her shoulder. She's wearing these VR goggles.
Yeah.
And she says, her line is, "Don't touch me, perv. I'm your sister." Which presumably is the only way they could crowbar in the fact that she's his sister, was just to say it outright as if he didn't know. And it will never matter that he even has a sister. She's barely in the film from this point on, and it will never matter what member of his family she is.
All that matters is she's wearing the VR goggles.
Yeah, the VR goggles are the thing they're foreshadowing here.
And he has to guide her.
And
somewhere.
Dad's stepping on the Lego. His only lines in this part of the film, this the only lines apart from his one, I think maybe three-word line at the end of the film, are clean up this Lego, basically. And I you know, stepped on some Lego, it's the most painful thing in the world. If there is one thing that doesn't need foreshadowing, it is how painful it is to step on Lego.
Yeah. You don't need to say it, you could just do it.
Yeah.
And go, ah! And that's enough.
Everyone knows that's a thing.
Yeah. And actually,
you might as well have him like stand on a thumbtack and go, oh, thumbtacks really hurt when they stick into your foot.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, Max is basically just pissed off that there's lots of people in the house. He tries to bother his mum, who's on the call to the airport, and she won't listen to him. So he goes and sits. He goes into the garage and sits in the product placement.
this house is huge, right?
Massive.
She's trying to talk to the airport in order to sort out what's going on with the flights.
Yeah.
And the place is being really noisy with, you know, Nerf guns going off and all that kind of stuff and kids running around. Why doesn't she just go to a quieter room in the house
Well, and I think as much like the other family's house, this is an inverse TARDIS, because the outside of the house is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, the White House, basically, size. That kind of... It's ridiculously large. And even though later on we'll see various traps set up, we'll see barely any of the house. Almost all the action will happen around the main hallway.
Yeah.
So there's actually no other... You know, it's one of those houses that where it's almost all cardboard, like in Blazing Saddles. It's it's... It's a smaller house that has been made to look like a bigger house from the outside. That's what it is. They haven't actually got that many rooms.
Right. Fair enough. So I was kind of thinking at this, given that they're remaking this film that was made in 1990 in 2021, how are they going to cover the fact that, you know, that's because I saw a meme the other day, which was probably ahead of this. Going, oh yeah, that's it. Because you know, if Home Alone was made now, well, you'd just text the kid, or the kid would text you and go, yeah, before you at the airport, you've left me behind, and they get there. So that I'm thinking, how are they going to cover that up? And so far, I'm not convinced. You know, they come up with a different way of, you know, they've all got to go in many cars and they're counting the things it in two cars and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. In the original, and I mean, I know I keep going back to the original, but when Kevin pushes Buzz, he knocks over some milk on, and so when they're cleaning up the milk, Kevin's passport and ticket gets accidentally put in the trash.
Yeah.
There's a storm that night, so it knocks out the power and their clock radio, alarm clock, doesn't wake them up in time. So they're in a much bigger rush than they expected. Kevin's been sent upstairs to the loft room, essentially, by himself, because he didn't want to share a room with the cousin who drinks too much soda and wets the bed. There's this intricate trail of things that all happen. The kid from next door comes to look at the cars that they're taking to the airport and accidentally gets counted when they're counting heads.
Yeah.
None of that happens in this film. Max just falls asleep in the car.
Yeah. In the product placement.
And his mum, and this is like pre-dinner time. As he's going downstairs, mum's yells, okay, pizza's here, everyone come and eat. No one notices he's not there for pizza. Yeah. And apparently his mum, although she thinks she's on a different plane to him because the family has been split onto two flights, at no point does she think she would say goodbye to her 10-year-old son that night or the next morning.
Yeah.
She wouldn't say, see you in Tokyo at any point.
Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll be travelling with these guys. They'll be fine. We'll see you there. Yeah. To demonstrate how much she would miss him.
Yeah.
Should he, by perchance, you know, get left home alone?
So he goes and sits in the in the product placement BMW, which could not be more prominently branded.
Yeah.
And because they're fucking rich, that it has like iPad kind of video player things attached to the headrests, and he watches some Looney Tunes, some Roadrunner cartoon. Yeah. Which is a bit odd because it's Warner Brothers and this is a Disney film. But but I thought, okay, perfect time to do a bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Because you can definitely have, in a Roadrunner cartoon, a trap that he can then replicate later on.
Yes, exactly. I thought, aha, thing there, Wile E. Coyote building these elaborate traps. They never work. No, they always backfire on him.
You could learn from it. But don't do that. They don't give a shit about it. They just don't even try.
No, they just kind of. It's enough to go, oh yeah, Wile E. Coyote. Everyone knows. Everyone knows he makes traps.
Nobody notices he doesn't have pizza. Mum doesn't say goodbye. And the next scene, I noted the time that is on the news in the next scene when we cut to Jeff and Pam's house. It's 7:44 p.m.
Right.
So that's the time he goes to sit in the car in the garage and fall asleep.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, he is 10, admittedly, so I don't know what his bedtime is. I mean, he says he's 10.
Yeah. He's eaten lots of pizza. No, he's eaten lots of McDonald's.
To be honest, one of the problems with this film, one of the many problems, is that Macaulay Culkin was, I think, well, his character was 8. I think Macaulay Culkin was 9, but he's a small kid. Macaulay Culkin looked 8, if not younger. Archie Yates is supposed to be 10 and looks older, and in fact was older. He was like 11 or 12 when they filmed it. I don't know to what extent that was because of COVID, because it was filming was delayed. But that's significantly older. He doesn't look like a little helpless kid. He looks like a young teen.
Yeah.
Which is a very, very different scenario. You know, when my kids were 12, they were at the age where I wouldn't leave them alone and go to Tokyo, but they would have been all right for 5 minutes if I needed to go out for something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the UK, I don't know about the law in the US, don't take legal advice from this, but it's perfectly okay. There isn't a kind of an age at which you're not allowed to leave your kids for a few minutes. It's like, you know, parental responsibility. If they're sensible kids, they're probably all right. So he is at an age where he should be fine by himself for a bit. Whereas the instant that Kevin is alone by himself in the first one, that's not okay. He's not, you know, he's a little kid. He can't cope by himself.
Yeah.
And much of the first part of Home Alone is about how he's little and can't cope by himself. That's part of what the family take the piss out of him for. He can't do anything by himself.
And that's why there's the imminent danger of him being left alone. So there's danger set up so that when the wet bandits arrive on the scene, there's the danger that we all know about being
this
manifest.
This helpless kid being attacked by two grown, dangerous people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, he goes through the story arc of becoming, you know, able to do the washing, the laundry, even though he gets frightened by the
furnace.
The furnace in the basement. And then he goes to the shop and there's that great bit where he's talking about coupons and stuff. So he walks down the road and they all falls out of the bag.
Yeah.
And so he kind of does those bits, but he still goes to seek solace in the church because he's, you know, on his own and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So you still feel he's quite vulnerable. He's learning to grow up a bit. He's putting a brave face on it, but he's really quite vulnerable. Whereas this guy, you actually don't give a shit about him. He's not vulnerable in any sense of the term, and it's not set up to make you think that he is, because he's stolen the doll. He's a bit miffed about, he's a bit disdainful of his entire family. You know, he wants to go on things and they won't let him, so he just fucks off because he's a bit noisy, so he'll go and sit somewhere. And so, and it turns out he's quite violent towards these perfectly harmless people. And he doesn't, so yeah, he's stolen something and now he's fighting to keep hold of it.
Yeah.
He's the bad guy.
So here we sympathise with the other couple a bit more. We learn that Jim lost. I keep calling him Jim because of The Office. Jim and Pam, Jeff and Pam.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Jeff lost his job. He's a data migration manager. He hilariously says computer words that other characters don't understand several times in the film. And you know, the data migration boom is gone, so he can't get another job. And she's a teacher. And they can't afford to keep the house on just her salary. So they are in dire financial straits and we feel bad for them.
Yep.
He's struggling in modern US economy and, you know, they want to keep the house that their kids have grown up in and they don't want, they're upset and worried about even telling their kids that they're in trouble. So that's the situation and we think they're great and he's an asshole. and
and the weather warning, you know, is foreshadowing of the
snowpocalypse
coming in.
Yeah,
which never actually ever appears.
Really briefly, they go out in it, but it's only for like a minute or two.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, fine.
It's not snowpocalypse. Where is it?
Yeah. So yeah, they go to bed, and Hunter, Jeff's brother, arrives at like 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah,
he was not supposed to. The family was supposed to arrive the following day for Christmas, to stay with him for Christmas. Hunter is the biggest asshole we've met yet in the film.
Yeah,
he's such a dick. They're a rich, entitled family with a kid who is way too old to apparently not be speaking. I don't think he says anything in the entire film.
Yeah.
He's and in a pushchair at various points, but he's quite old.
And kind of in like one of those baby grow things. Yeah. Which, and I'm thinking, what's going on?
What's going on there? Yeah. Hunter is a complete dick and essentially kind of takes over as they arrive and like acts entitled and awful. Basically.
And they're also the...
Again, makes us feel more sorry for Jeff.
Yeah, because they're there to just show how, you know, in fact, what they do is humiliate the Jeff and Pam in front of their kids by giving their kids very, very expensive presents.
Yeah.
And, you know, just being able to do all the things that Jeff can no longer do and wishes he could. Yeah.
And the nephew, the kid, Ollie, is a dick. The first thing we see him do is chuck a phone from the door to the just onto the street.
Yeah.
And the parents, Hunter and May, just act like, oh, this is great. He's such a great kid. Nothing. Yeah. He's such a golden boy. Nothing he can do is wrong, even though he's a complete little cunt. anyway.
No, tell us what you really think. And I also thought, what's the point of these characters that have arrived, and they're kind of, in a way, they're like, they are the annoying family that turn up, that piss off Kevin.
Yeah.
Hunter is Uncle Frank. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the ones that come over and then they just humiliate Jeff and Pam. So
every asshole they add to the film makes us sympathise with Jeff and Pam more.
Mm. Yeah.
It's weird.
And you can't, yeah. I mean, to go through with the whole switcheroo thing, they ought to have taken something from Max, or Max is trying to get something from them, and they're having to defend the... Well, there you go. We'll make that next... Where the adults have to defend their house against the oh no, that's just small soldiers.
Then the grown ups are torturing a kid.
That's true. Protecting.
Now I saw one idea where what they could do is have Buzz will show up. Buzz, Kevin's brother, will show up. He's a policeman now. If they had instead of inept burglars trying to get in. If they had some inept cops fighting the burglars, and the cops are constantly getting injured or something because they're bad at their job, that might be funny.
Yeah.
So long as someone's got to get injured in a Home Alone film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it should be someone you, at the very least, don't care about. Ideally, it should be someone you actively dislike. But making it the nicest... couple in the film who are just trying to provide for their family
is a weird choice. And it doesn't work because they're not bad. You know, they're set up as the good guys, and we have so many explanations of why they've got to go through with
it's
stealing
really
this doll.
Hammered home, yeah.
And the doll, you know, so in this moment when Hunter's, they've taken the double room and they have to Jeff and Pam have to sleep on the pullout. So he's surfing eBay and he finds this particular doll that's got the upside down head and it's worth $200,000. And he's going, right, well, we've got to get it back. We've got to do it. So he
he sees it He sees the doll on eBay because he thought, you know, this woman mentioned it had been on
the
show. He's looked on joblink.com because they couldn't get the rights to use linkedin.com. Weird, because they BMW were perfectly happy to give him money. But
someone's got integrity.
So he finds that this doll is worth a huge amount of money. And the box of dolls, by the way, we can see in this shot of him looking on his laptop. It's in the cupboard in the room they are in. Hunter and May have taken their bedroom, presumably. They're on the pullout in the front room. And the cupboard that the dolls are in a closed box, is in the same room as them.
Yeah.
He goes to look to get the doll because, you know, it's worth all this money. He thinks, you know, five a.m. this is. He thinks, all right, well, I need to look at it again, I guess. And it's gone. He finds it not there, 5 a.m. This is, in my opinion, important because... Yeah.
As it turns out.
Because of what we later find out happened to the doll.
Yeah.
Hunter and his family arrived at 1:15 a.m. and they immediately put their young child to bed.
Yeah.
And at 5 a.m., Jeff finds the doll is missing.
Oh, God. Yeah. Take note, dear listeners. Take note. Yeah.
And it and it is very strongly implied that Jeff has been awake all night. He has not been asleep. He has been worrying about not having any money and being on LinkedIn and looking at the fact that no one's even looked at his
CV.
Yeah.
Yeah. His resume. So and the other thing that struck me is, is $200,000 enough to solve their problems?
No, it's very Dr. Evil. It's very kind of...
And it led me to look up the earnings of a data migration manager. And it's about $200,000 a year.
So it's a year's salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not enough to pay off your mortgage.
Not only that, pay off the mortgage, fix all of the crap that they broke in the Mercer's enormous house, and presumably fix their car that they wreck later on, and remodel. And also, she says they took a family trip to Europe, the four of them. So
it's a
very, very lucky doll.
Mm.
Anyway, he realizes that what obviously happened is that that annoying fucking child stole his doll.
Yeah.
And given that he remembers exactly the child and mother's full names from when they were having a bit of an argument with each other, he therefore is able to track them down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he drives to their house.
So he drives to the house.
To confront them, presumably, to torch the kid. But everyone's rushing out. This is now the uncle, who's played by Pete Holmes, another college humour guy. And he's kind of getting the remaining kids into the Ubers to take them to the airport. And so he's not really listening. And so when Jeff kind of asks him about Carol, he's like, assumes he's an Uber driver and doesn't get an answer. So at this point, the families are all being arseholes to each other. One kid is filling someone else's suitcase with snow. Someone is firing snowballs with a T-shirt launcher, which I didn't know you could do. Don't think you probably can. And kind of generally
important
not...
Important for later.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, foreshadowing, yeah. At this point, another uncle, maybe, comes out to give Jeff his sleep apnea machine, assuming he's the
Uber driver.
This is Chris Parnell.
Right.
He's Dr. Spachemin from 30 Rock. He's Cyril Figgis from Archer. He's Jerry from Rick and Morty. He's a fucking god in terms of comedy acting.
Yeah.
And he's given nothing. No funny lines at all. This is his entire part. This is all of his part in the film. His one scene is all he has. He is later kind of has some lines from off screen when they're in Tokyo. We don't even see him. None of them are funny either. Why get Chris Parnell to do this?
Box office.
No, he's not. Like, they're not advertising it as this film has, you know.
Right, all right. Oh, no. So it's just...
It's just...
They're all...
I mean, it can only be they were friends. And I can't imagine how they could be friends with the people involved in it. Because, I mean,
not anymore, definitely.
But he's not, you know, involved in Borat or Ali G or SNL or College Humor, particularly.
Yeah.
So maybe their paths have crossed somehow, but fuck me. Why would he take a role that didn't even have a single funny line? It feels like they wrote more or used more and then just cut it out because, I don't know, time?
But he comes down the steps with this bag, walks past the back of the car, car to give it to the guy to say, put this in the car. He could have just put it in the car.
Yeah.
And it really serves no purpose. He could have cut that entire scene and cut to Max still asleep in the BMW.
Yeah.
Though, who stirs, because we can all hear what's going on outside, because he's only in the garage, which is just at the end of the drive on which two cars and 400 people are making a noise. And yet he doesn't wake up. Twice we cut back to him.
Well, as
hear it
as they're leaving, Pete Holmes sets the alarm code, which we hear loudly is 1112. And Jeff even goes, "Ooh, that's a bad code."
To
just draw attention to it, and then they leave.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Well, yeah. That, for the longest time there, he suddenly gets I didn't understand how he got there. I was thinking, did he come in one of the Ubers and then they've gone off in it? Because he seemed to be really upset.
Yeah. The moment they leave, he now suddenly has to talk to them more urgently than he was when they were all there.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And all he needed to say was, I just want to see whether the kid got the doll. But he didn't stop anyone and say that.
He just kept saying, is Max around?
Yeah. It's sort of saying, look, yes, I think your kid stole my doll. Do you know anything about it?
Now, there is a moment here which I wonder if it's the other thing in your pro column. Because I thought it was actually pretty funny.
Right.
Pam texts Jeff to see where he is. Because they're such baddies, they're on their way to volunteer for singing for seniors in old people's home. She wonders where he is.
Not a lot of singing goes on.
He says he's out getting milk.
Yeah.
And at that moment, the fridge opens, someone else opens the fridge, and all they have in the fridge is milk. And then she picks up another kind of carton of milk from the counter. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was pretty good. I liked
it. Pretty good. Yeah. Not in the pro column. But quite good. And you think, oh, yeah. And that gets referenced again later on.
Yeah. It comes up.
Way too much. Didn't need it. But, yeah.
So Jeff punches a snowman and then apologizes to the snowman because he's a nice guy. Then he looks through the window and thinks he sees a doll-shaped shape in Max's jacket.
Yeah.
He tries the key, which he saw the uncle leave down kind of by a plant pot.
Plant pot.
But panics and can't kind of get himself to go in. So
because he hears a police car come by and it's definitely a police car, and then it turns out it's just another car with red and blue things on the roof.
Yeah.
And yeah. So he can't do it. He's got to come back later. Yeah.
So then we go to the old people's home and look at singing for seniors, which is actually bell ringing for seniors, it seems.
Yeah, ringing for seniors. Yeah.
Jim Rash from Community, the Dean Pelton from Community is the band leader, who is actually pretty funny. He is, again, a good comic actor, and he is given some kind of funny lines. He is given the opportunity to be a bit funny. So that's good. That's one person who is used to their strengths.
Played to their strengths.
So far in the film.
Yeah.
They have a stupid argument during their campanology about where Jeff has been and wanting to break into a kid's house. Pam somehow, during this, because they're basically bell ringing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Pam has the last bell in the song, somehow rings it out of tune. I don't think, is that a thing you can do with bells?
I guess if you ring the wrong bell,
they each only have two bells.
Yeah,
they're like a, I don't know what musical instrument it would be where everyone, each hand has one bell and rings it. But when she does her last one, it's not in tune. It's not like the wrong note either. It's off key.
Flat. Yeah.
So she somehow manages to fuck up ringing a single bell.
Yeah. And for some reason, her hunter is there to remind them that he's late.
Yeah.
And point out how terrible it all is. There. Yeah. No sign of tiny little sign of the arsehole kid. But yeah.
There's an old guy at the
office who says this is shit. Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I did briefly wonder whether this was the old guy from Home Alone. The old man.
No.
It's not. No, he died ages ago.
Yeah. No, I was thinking, why have they put him in?
He kind of looks a bit similar. But no.
Yeah.
No.
Is that a callback? A cameo.
Yeah.
But no. And so this has all happened. Like, God, he's late. So he's still at the house. They're all leaving. He's at the house. He goes, drives off to campanology for seniors. And then he's late. And they do the whole song, blah, 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 blah. And then we go back and Max is still asleep.
Yeah.
Still in the car. And then he kind of gets up, goes out, and he discovers that the whole place is empty, and he gets his dream come true in, you know, proper callback to Kevin, and all that. And
we get the same music cues that we get when Kevin finds out. But Kevin is, again, because he's a bit younger. Kevin, the previous night, wished that he didn't have a family anymore. He wished that he was by himself.
Yeah.
And he says with wonder, I made my family disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
And then remembers that his family are assholes and then says, I made my family disappear. We don't get that sense of wonder. He's just like, yeah, I've got the house to myself. This is cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's not as, because in the original, it's not about having the house to himself. It's about there's that hateful phrase, the journey he goes on between making his family disappear because they're hateful to him, and then realizing that actually he's on his own.
Yeah.
And he does that really quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah. There's like 90 seconds of eating ice cream and watching Angels with Filthy Souls.
I'm eating ice cream. And then I'm getting kind of fed up with it really quickly and missing them. But you kind of don't get that with this. It's what they've done is gone, right, brilliant. Let's do the whole sequence where he's on his own and he gets to run the Hot Wheels down the stairs and all that kind of stuff. They don't realize that's not the point. The point was, you know, the heartfelt stuff. Yeah. This film has got no heart. Heart in it. So they miss all those. They miss the point. There is text and then subtext. You know, it's the subtext that allows you to do the epilogue bit or to do the end bit, to do the resolution of the problem. When they get reunited or that. When he realizes he misses his mum, that's the point. That's the subtext going on.
There is a moment before he starts enjoying his time alone, where he switched on the computer and wants to go on the internet.
Yeah.
But internet access as a whole is blocked.
Yeah.
Which is hideously impractical and definitely not something that you would do.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? If it's you're not all like going on
you
holiday.
Need a PIN or something to get in. It's just blocked. You just can't use the internet.
But why? And why are they all? Why would you do that? Okay, so we're going on holiday. We're going to set the alarm, turn down the heating. You know, maybe
turn off the internet. Know. But they haven't turned off the thing. Is
no,
they haven't turned off the router
internet.
Or anything like that because the home bot that they have, which is obviously they couldn't get Google to give them money or Siri or whatever.
Yeah.
That's connected to the internet. That can still do stuff. So the internet isn't off. It's just the computer won't do it. Now, this house is massive. It is... They are... And we've said they've got BMW. They are so rich. There is not a chance this child doesn't have a cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My kid didn't have a cell phone when she was 10, or either of mine, but... We're not super fucking rich. She's not very, very spoiled. She got one because...
And that wasn't
she got 2021. One when she was 11, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But he definitely... If he doesn't have a cell phone, he's got like 9 other things that can connect to the internet. No question. Yeah. He's got tablets. He's got...
Yeah.
He's
got some kind of games machine.
There's no way he doesn't have a way of contacting his mum. But that's all they can do. They're like... We've tied our own hand. We've painted ourselves into a corner. We've set this film in 2021. We've decided that this child cannot, like, contact another human. So that's all we can do. We can just claim it and then hope no one ever questions anything.
Yeah. Apart from the fact, but why would you block the internet if you're not there?
Yeah.
Other than to prevent your 10-year-old kid from seeing the internet.
But who isn't supposed to be left home alone anyway?
Who is? But exactly, yeah.
So we get a bit of messing around. He gets in a suit that is a bit like Scarface, and then eats a pile of M&Ms. Briefly puts women's clothes on, and that's
surfs down the stairs on the ironing board.
And again,
hangs his jacket up in a massive on a walks past the jacket, which we get a close up of with the lump inside it.
And again, it feels very different because he's a young teen. He's not an 8-year-old. It doesn't feel as playful in that way. So we're going to leave it there for now.
Yeah.
And part
Thank
two.
God. Yeah. Yeah.
Because this was quite a long... I mean, we've got a history
of
taking a lot longer to talk about the film.
I know.
Well,
I think it's, you know, it's in the tradition of kind of dealing with fallacious arguments, really, isn't it? So you've got kind of, you know, it's very quick... the truth has barely got its pants on before a lie is halfway around the world. You've got to spend time. I mean,
this was a
Gish
Gallop of shit.
Yes, exactly. So. That. So we've had to deal with each globule of excretia landing on our viewers, on our face as a viewer, you know, and insulting us, insulting our senses. We've had to pick that apart. Like you do when you kind of you've got to go. Oh no, I've still got another piece of dog shit in the tread of my shoe. You have to kind of gently go through.
Got to get in there with a toothbrush or something, don't you?
Yeah, not your own toothbrush, obviously. Yeah,
no, not your own. No,
but it takes ages to unpick it. Is what we're saying. You know, if you're dealing with shit, it takes you a long while before you feel clean. So you know, it's going to take another. Another bite at the shitty cherry.
I'm scared now by this metaphor. It's gone too far.
And over Christmas is not good, is it? No, people are looking at their spoonfuls of pudding now, going, oh dear, what have I done? Uh-huh. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
So, have a fantastic rest of the holiday period. Whenever you're listening to this, and we will see you for part two on New Year's Eve, where we will complete this piece of crap film.
And whatever you do, don't feel tempted to watch any of it in between now and then.
No. Why would you have been tempted by this that we've talked about?
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, but yeah, don't fall. You know, don't fall off the wagon. Just don't do it. Yeah. Just don't do it.
Trust us. Know? It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, it isn't. We warned you right at the beginning. We're just going to warn you again. Here's the for your own mental health. Don't go near it, please.
I don't know why they're always trying to remake the classics.
Oh my gosh, this is so terrible.
That did not sound right.
We did a bad thing. One of the worst bads we could have done.
Oh, this is garbage.